My name is Lee Meyer. I am out of Cincinnati. I am the president of the Unitarian Universalist Council of Greater Cincinnati. More about that later. We have a few changes on the program. Unfortunately, M.J. Pearson, who is a past president of the UU Council and a past member of the executive board of the Metropolitan Area Religious Coalition of Cincinnati, had an accident last evening. She is well. She is recuperating, but she is not able to be here with us today. So I will be speaking a bit about UU Council and a bit about the Metropolitan Area Religious Coalition of Cincinnati. We are fortunate to have with us Al Gerhardstein, who is the attorney who negotiated the collaborative agreement between the community and the City of Cincinnati Police Department following race riots, and he will discuss some of that operation. Thank you for the lights. I appreciate that. And Margie Meyer, who is the president of the Metropolitan Area Religious Coalition, will follow up with some more information about Mark and how a number of different, 17 different religious judicatories work together in the Cincinnati area on issues of common interest. And actually, the UU Council of Greater Cincinnati was formed about 48 years ago, actually in order to create a UU judicatory, a body that included the UU congregations in the area joining voluntarily that could then participate as one denominational voice within the Metropolitan Area Religious Coalition of Cincinnati. It was established following 1967 race riots in Cincinnati, which, if you don't remember them, I'm sure you heard about them at the time. This was big news. Metropolitan Area Religious Coalition was formed a year later by 9 different religious denominations in the area in order to pull together the religious community to deal with major issues that were, frankly, having a major social impact on Cincinnati. Their mission was to find a way to work together as religious communities on important issues that were driving racial disparity in our region. Mark now counts 17 religious judicatories in its membership. This includes the Catholic Archdiocese of Cincinnati, the Episcopal Diocese of Southwest Ohio, a number of Protestant denominations, including 2 different Black Baptist groups, 2 Islamic associations, Quakers. It is a broad spectrum of belief and practice. Our operating principles are simple. Each judicatory, each religion, is respected, and each religious judicatory gets an equal vote on issues. The UU Council vote gets the same weight as the Catholic vote. This prevents 1 or 2 large denominations from dominating Mark decisions. Because our form of governance requires consensus, our rules require that any motion, in order to succeed, must do so by unanimous vote. On any voting issue for Mark, all voting judicatories must vote yes. A judicatory can abstain and allow a motion that they would otherwise vote against to pass. But if any one judicatory votes no, the issue fails. Because our form of governance requires consensus, our rules require, this requirement for a unanimous agreement on substantive issues drives negotiation and discussion within judicatories. It can also force negotiations among judicatories. Can an issue that is a negative for one denomination be restated to resolve that issue? Is there another way to approach the problem? Or is this a problem that Mark, at least for the present, can't pursue? Delegates meetings are held monthly, except for summer. Any member of a marked judicatory can attend a delegates meeting. Invited speakers discuss issues of local or regional importance. If an action is to be taken in one of the, on one of those issues, for example, whether MARC as an organization is going to support a local ordinance or a state issue, this is where the voting takes place in the delegates meetings. If any judicatory, any religious denomination, has more than one delegate present, then those delegates caucus to decide how their one vote will be cast. There are no fractional votes. The vote is either yes, no, or abstain. MARC has an executive board that meets to oversee the work of the executive director and staff. The board meets weekly, overviews the budget, screens potential presenters to the monthly delegates meetings, identifies problem areas and issues. Each member judicatory has one seat on the executive board. I'm the UU on the board. Each year, MARC judicatories select two issues for special consideration during the next calendar year. For 2016, the two issues are economic recovery, income disparity, and employment, and interfaith dialogue, human rights. Of course, we don't operate in a vacuum, so sometimes things happen. Because of the relatively recent departures of both the City of Cincinnati and the University of Cincinnati police chiefs, community police relations is back on the agenda. It's at the heart of so much of our history, and it remains a major concern. The murderous assault in Orlando less than 2 weeks ago guarantees that gun violence will remain an issue. In fact, gun violence was the topic of our first interfaith dialogue on contentious issues held last month at the University of Cincinnati's College of Law. It should come as no surprise that that discussion became contentious. Actually, the advocates of gun control had to be restrained when the NRA representative stated his position on gun shows. We're hoping to find additional funding to continue these discussions because our 48-year history tells us that differences cannot be resolved unless people come together. And with that, I will turn it over to Al, who will tell you much more about the collaborative agreement, how it came together, and where it stands today. Al Gerhardstein.
Thanks, Lee. The collaborative wouldn't exist without MARC. So this is a great time to be talking about at GA, about interfaith groups, about how UUs can coexist and take advantage of interfaith groups, and to see all that theory in practice. So back in 2001, working with the Black United Front, I filed a class action, and we were ready to go after the city for years and years of oppression. We identified a pattern of excessive force, a pattern of racial profiling, a pattern of occupying the black community. And we had this all written up in our legal documents, and we were ready to seek our preliminary injunction and to put the city under a court order. But I got a flyer from an organization called the Andrus Family Fund, which participated and tried to lead community reconciliation efforts. And I, by then, had been litigating these types of issues for 20 years, and I knew that solely having the black community and the city bosses around the table to try and resolve something as important as police community relations, fairness to the black community, and public safety was missing about 80% of the community. But that's how lawsuits are. They have two parties. So how to solve the problem? We actually created an alternate model. We said, we're going to proceed with our preliminary injunction because lawsuits are war at one level and you have to threaten to do what you said you're going to do to get people's attention. But we said, if you want another path, we will do a collaborative plan. And the collaborative plan was a effort organized under court supervision to solicit and participate with members across the Cincinnati community. We divided the whole community into 8 stakeholder groups, faith leaders and social workers and business leaders and police officers and their spouses, police administration, youth, various minority groups. We had this vision that we could gather input from all of these disparate groups, listen carefully, record their views, say them back so that people knew we were listening, and somehow come up with a broader plan that would speak to everyone's vision of what policing ought to look like. Well, that isn't what lawyers do, okay? I mean, I'm used to cross-examining people and putting documents in front of people and badgering them, and I like this, but it wasn't my skill set. So with Dwayne Holm, who was then the director of MARC, we set out together to try and sell the city on this. So city council had to vote to participate in the collaborative because it was exposing the city to a very different model. And we also did something that I think is still unique in America. We invited the police union as a separate party to this agreement. Because in our city, the police union, and I had represented black police officers, had as much tension with their bosses as the community had with the police. So if I was sitting at the table with the police chief on the other side and he said, okay, my officers are going to do X, and then the boss says to his officers, go do X, they're going to say, there he goes again, bossing us around. You know, there's no buy-in. There's no real commitment. And that's a problem, especially if you're trying to do some sort of culture change, which is what we were trying to do. Well, I won't say that the riots didn't help this effort, because they did. We had filed for all this prior to the riots. Then Timothy Thomas was shot on April 9th, 2001, April 7th, 2001. And then there were riots. And then our call for a broad coalition seemed to have more urgency and resonance. So we did get city council to vote in favor by 5-4. And then the police union submitted this to a secret ballot, as if it was like a contract, because it was that important. And the Metropolitan Area Religious Council was critical to this, because the director at the time, Dwayne, brought in faith leaders that spoke to the constituency of all the city council members. Now, just picture this, because this was huge. I also represent Planned Parenthood. So I'm defending an abortion provider, and we're at war with the Catholic Church. I was raised Catholic. The Archbishop at the time had literally called me into the office. I thought we were going to have a chat about how outrageous some of the Knights of Columbus members were out in front of the clinic. And instead, he told me, he found out I was raised Catholic, and he told me I was going to go to hell, and don't I want to reconsider representing Planned Parenthood? And, you know, this is a personal exchange I had had with the Archbishop and was basically condemned to hell. So am I the guy to approach the Archbishop and say, work with us on the collaborative? Absolutely not. But my fingerprints are all over it. So what do? You have a group like MARC, which has excellent relations with the Catholic Church, and you really, you know, use those resources wisely. And believe it or not, the Archbishop came into City Council and testified in favor of their vote for the collaborative. And that was the first time the Archbishop had ever done something so secular. I mean, this was really getting your hands dirty, to actually walk into City Council chambers and put his political capital on the line, put his prestige on the line, and say, you ought to vote for this. And that was a big deal in Cincinnati, which is a Catholic town, and the entire West Side is Catholic. And the entire West Side at the time was thinking there's really no problem with the police. There's a problem with all those black people who think there's a problem with the police, but not with the police. So they had to really be led to this effort. And that wasn't just a one-off presentation. This was something that was carefully planned. I went before the whatever the group is. What's that regular group? The delegates or the?
Oh, the delegates council.
Yeah, the delegates council, and brought them all up to date on what we were doing, and so there was a lot of feedback to the various groups within MARC, and the Archbishop's support was well thought out and completely persuasive. And again, that couldn't have happened without a group like MARC acting together. So then we go forward and we actually hold all of these community conversations. And the faith community there and all the members of MARC were very critical to that. Because how do you have a chat with a town of roughly 1 million people about the 1,000 police officers who are engaged in our daily lives? Well, you do it by breaking everybody up into their interest groups. You train facilitators who really have an organized way of doing this listening so that everybody's heard, so that people are respected, and that, as I say, there's also a recorder for every one of these meetings. And that was critical because people need to know they're not just wasting their time. They need to know that their views are being captured. And that was incredibly helpful. And MARC was in the middle of all of that training. There were many people who were very active in MARC who also signed up to be the facilitators for these conversations. There was a lot of press coverage of those conversations so that we could have a positive image of police reform being projected. And there were a lot of people from MARC who were answering questions on camera and well-versed in what we were trying to do. It wasn't result-oriented. We weren't demanding a particular outcome, and we were simply listening at that point and trying to get a notion of what it is that would bring people together from all these different groups. This was completely uncomfortable for me as a trial lawyer because I work backwards from a verdict form. I know exactly what I want, and I don't like to let any control slip from the presentation I'm doing or a witness to stray from the focus that I want to make it. And it was incredibly nerve-wracking. The only thing I had that made it comfortable for me coming from the litigation world was that we all went into this knowing that there would be a court order. And I didn't know what the terms were yet, but the one thing the black community needed before they would give up their precious role as the sole plaintiff was the fact that there would be a court order. Why is that? Because we had just spent, 30 years suing the city, getting nowhere, having blue ribbon panels, having people in suits write reports that don't get heard, burning up people's time and energy with useless periods of frenzy after another person got shot or whatever. So we wanted to do something that would be totally different, and we knew this would fit the bill. Now, at the same time, the Cincinnati Inquirer was running People to People, I think it was called, and those were in-home conversations. The Cincinnati Human Relations Commission was running study circles, which had a curriculum around interfaith, interracial, interclass dialogue and around policing. And all of those conversations were being, there were note takers for every one of those, and those all came back to us as well. There was also online surveys that were established so that people could respond to questions about their view of policing. All of this was heated. We did a very thorough review of all the notes that came out of all the conversations. We had a very good leader in Jay Rothman who has written about this, and there's a number of publications that have tracked all this. And we came to some defining sessions where we brought all these different groups together. And picture these dialogue sessions. It was actually quite moving. I mean, while I'm impatient waiting for this to be over with so I can get back to court, I'm actually learning a lot, and I think everybody involved in them did. I remember one in particular where a young police officer was there with his wife in a circle, and when it was going around the circle, he asked this older black guy, you know, what his experience was with the police. And, you know, because he was being a little defensive. He was saying, you know, I've never had an encounter with you. You don't know me. You know, why would you have any resentment about me? And the black guy immediately went into a very detailed discussion of a beating he got in 1967 in Avondale, in Cincinnati. Blow by blow, exactly where, what everybody's wearing, who was there, what was on the street. This was yesterday in his head. And the young police officer needed to hear that, needed to hear the impact of that kind of trauma, needed to realize how these experiences are seared into people's persona. And I think it was sobering to him. And to this day, I mean, this next week I'm doing it. I just settled a case where they falsely accused somebody and had him get down on the sidewalk at gunpoint in front of his church and all this stuff. And we're, one of the pieces of the resolution is to do a meeting like that where my clients are going to sit with the police officers and explain to them just how it felt to have to be at gunpoint. And so there'll always be a need for this type of dialogue. And the community-wide dialogue was certainly healthy in Cincinnati. We came out of this with distilling more and more common statements to the point where we had five common goals. And the details of those goals are not critical for this group. The fact is that we reached five goals that police officers, my totally pissed off black clients, faith groups, people from the West Side that are, don't have any problem with the police, and city administrators all agreed on using consensus. And it wasn't, you know, this wasn't a steamroller. This was tedious stuff, again, making me totally uncomfortable, you know, as people swapped out words and, you know, negotiated terms, and we knew we needed five simple statements, and we got there. And it was, and it went, and this wasn't fluff. I mean, we're talking about commitment to responsible use of force. If I don't know what's on her PowerPoint, but it might have the five goals. My PowerPoint has that. But at any rate, you can, if you go to www.gbfirm.com, there is a PowerPoint that I'm using these days on police reform. And it, at any rate, the www.gbfirm.com. G as in girl, B as in boy, firm.com. And that is my law firm's website. There is a tag on there for police reform, and there's a summary of the whole collaborative agreement is there, and all the resources that I recommend for people working on police issues are there that are some of the best in the country. So you can see this. But my point is that we achieved it. And then I finally got to do my thing, which is going in the back room and negotiating all the dirty details of a comprehensive agreement that a court could actually enforce that wasn't just these principles. But because of the structure of this, we, as a class action, we had to go before the court and do what's called a fairness hearing, where you describe the problem, and then you explain how you solve the problem, and then the court hears objections from the class of community members and determines whether this is a fair, equitable, and reasonable settlement. And we went through that in Cincinnati and did a day-long fairness hearing, and once again, Mark was critical in that effort, because the Archbishop testified at the fairness hearing, as well as the Baptist ministers and a rabbi and an imam. And that was all critical stuff in reminding the community that had participated in this community-wide conversation of the widespread support that this agreement had. And prior to that fairness hearing, we went back through community forums and said, this is our agreement. Do you recognize the principles that you all agreed on here? Have we missed something? Is this reasonable? Do you have any objections? And so we tried to get as much practical feedback as possible. And this is, again, this is an example of interfaith work where the religious bodies fulfilled an absolutely critical role that lawyers can't do. But they fed into what we need when it comes to police reform, at least for this topic, which is a court order, because ultimately city administrators like to drag their feet when they're exposed to having done bad things, and they don't really want to implement promises of reform. So I think, for the most part, they need a court order. But this court order had such widespread support that we were able to really get the thing implemented over time. And Mark was critical through that effort from the beginning through to this day. I mean, because once the court supervision of the collaborative ended, there was a manager's advisory committee established, which sort of replaced our central group under the court order. Mark has a seat on that manager's advisory group and continues to this day to make sure that the principles of the collaborative are fulfilled in our daily policing in Cincinnati. One other thing about this that I think Mark was critical on. We knew when we were working on this that we wanted to change the very philosophy of policing. And Mark was helpful in supporting the notion that you can reduce arrests while keeping people safe. And we constantly, and Mark was very good on this, constantly have to tell people, we're not going to compromise safety. We're going to do stuff that keeps everybody safe. But there's a way to do this safety bit where we're more fair. And when you expose people to the strategies that have been the status quo, the use of sweeps, the use of jump out groups, the use of zero tolerance policing, you see that the over-incarceration of blacks starts on the street. And the bitterness that many of my client groups feel starts right on the street because of the way they've been policed. So if you can get all these disparate groups led by somebody who's a neutral, like Mark, buy into a different model of policing, you're doing good work, and that's what we did. We adopted as the central tenet for policing in Cincinnati a commitment to problem solving. And problem solving is data-driven policing. It isn't officer-friendly just having a meeting with a few community members. It's looking at all your service calls and organizing them by repeat offender, repeat victim, and repeat location. Wow, we have 15 runs to 2020 Reading Road in the last 2 weeks. Rather than keep going back to 2020 Reading Road and just arresting whoever is the problem on that service call, you say to the sergeant who's in charge of that area, go figure out what's going on. And the sergeant doesn't just go wander around asking stupid questions. The sergeant has a model called SARA, where you do scanning, analysis, response, and assessment. And that SARA model is used throughout Cincinnati on all these repeat locations every day. So the sergeant goes to the building, talks to the super, talks to several of the tenants, organizes a problem-solving group, maybe has the contiguous property owners involved, maybe has some of the service providers who come to that building involved. They sit down and they come up with a plan. The plan might include arresting a couple of people that are truly causing serious problems. But the plan may also and most likely includes hardening the doors, changing the way that the landlord screens potential tenants, putting lighting up, having plantings, cleaning the property up. Lots of different environmental things that can be done to make that property less hospitable to criminal activity. This suppresses crime and reduces arrests both. That's a big deal. And that's what my clients, the black community, has always really celebrated. So we've been at it for 15 years. Mark has been a partner through that whole time. And it's the best use of both of our talents that I can imagine.
Thank you, Al. Okay, so what you've heard is that we created a denominational presence, adjudicatory, by creating UU Council so that Unitarian Universalists could participate as partners with the Catholics and the Episcopals and everybody else. The president of MARC now is going to get up because what you've also heard is probably our most outstanding example of a result of the various religious groups getting together and working under some good lay leadership with excellent legal advice to solve a major, major social problem within the Cincinnati area. Margie Meyer, Rabbi Meyer, is now going to tell you some more about some of the other things that MARC has worked together on.
Thank you. Thank you. I was just about to do that.
Slow enough so we can write.
Okay. And the other thing is that we on purpose have time for questions afterwards. I'm Rabbi Margie Meyer. I am president of MARC right now for 2 years, and then someone from another judicatory will be. I represent the Jewish Community Federation on MARC. MARC, M-A-R-C-C, stands for the Metropolitan Area Religious Coalition of Cincinnati. We're larger than the city actually now, but when we started, we were just the city. I'm going to do a little more than what Lee said. I want to go back and give the scope of what you've heard so far from MARC, or the religious community's point of view, and then go into other things that we do as well. As Lee told you, and Al as well, we started in 1968. It was rather propitious. It was after major racial disturbances in Cincinnati, and the mayor of Cincinnati called together a group of religious leaders, a rabbi, a priest, and a minister. And more than one minister, because it was a white minister and a black minister, with the idea of being a bridge to the black community because of the riots and the political community couldn't reach them. On April 4th, those of you who have gray hair like me may remember this date. On April 4th, 1968, at noon, the mayor held a press conference and announced the beginning of this new organization. That day, at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, Martin Luther King was assassinated. And we had riots. We had just begun. At the time, we were one of the few connections between the local government and the African-American community, because many of the religious members did have standing with the African-American religious leaders. And so we began brokering what was a long-standing and continuing conversation, as Al pointed out, about racial tension and advocacy to remedy institutional racism, which existed and still exists to some extent. It was important that we were denominations, not individual congregations. That gave us far more standing with each other. You know what it's like when you get different religious groups together. You know what it's like when you get two UU groups together, I'm sure. We have a joke among us that you have two Jews, three opinions, so it's the same thing. So it was important that each denomination, all of the congregations, work together as denominations. We were an experiment. We were an experiment in religious and secular communities working together. We also stressed the importance of church and state. We work with the government, but we do not take any monies from any groups other than our constituencies, because we don't want to be bought by anybody. It took more than 30 years of building bridges with each other and other communities and the African-American community, and now we're reaching out to other communities, for the kind of trust to be built up that was there when it was really needed, as Al pointed out, for the collaborative agreement. But it started earlier. In 1975, there was the first intervention of MARC during a police strike. Three white officers were indicted. I don't know if they were actually indicted, Alan, but they were brought up for having harassing black citizens. And we of MARC, I wasn't there yet, but MARC was contacted because by legal aid, because they'd been contacted and they couldn't really do anything. They'd been contacted actually by the Department of Justice. But legal aid knew that perhaps MARC could get out into the community through the religious connections. And so they had an investigative committee, and Archbishop Bernardine of Cincinnati, who then became the cardinal in Chicago later years, he worked with them. And MARC worked with a very young lawyer named Al Gerhardstein, who was just sort of starting out then. MARC convinced the Archbishop to kind of go public, to chair this investigation, and to work and to testify before City Council, and that made a big difference. Today, through all of these years, and building up, the director of MARC can contact any police official at any time, and does. Police leaders regularly speak to our executive board, and we've had several changes in the last few years on police chiefs, so we need to get to know each one. And our executive director was on the committee to hire one of the recent police chiefs. As far as the collaborative agreement of 2001 is concerned, Al gave you many, many details. But let me just say that the collaborative agreement, let me emphasize, was a community partnering plan for community problem-oriented policing. And MARC delegates, a cross-section of denominations, engaged in focus groups. MARC convened meetings between the police chief and the African-American clergy on a regular basis and continues to do so today as needed. And after the agreement was signed, MARC worked with the court-appointed monitor of the memorandum of agreement. So that in 2007, when everything was complied with and it was supposed to be ended, MARC said, no, there's some more things that we still need to keep our fingers on this. We still need to watch what's going on. And they requested a one-year extension to work on the collaborative agreement goals. And the different denominational leaders wrote letters to the court, to the Judge Susan DeLotte, who was in charge of this, explaining why this extension was needed. And in 2008, and it was granted, Judge DeLotte granted it. 2008, the next year, we recommended to the city manager monitoring groups with representatives from a cross-section of the community. And from that came out, and Al mentioned it, something that's called the City Manager's Advisory Group. And it monitors the implementation of the collaborative agreement. It continues to meet now. And it's interesting, just a year or so ago, we got wind of the fact that perhaps the mayor and the new city manager wanted to end the manager's advisory group. So we kind of used our pressure, religious leaders using pressure of different kinds, and it still continues and it still meets. It's never ending, but it really is important. Recently, and those of you certainly from Ohio and others of you as well know about the murder of the young boy in Cleveland, Tamir Rice, and a few other situations like that in Ohio, the governor had a task force on what was happening. One of the places they met was in Cincinnati, and so we at MARC presented to the governor's task force a statement explaining what we've explained to you today, explaining the collaborative agreement, explaining why other communities should use something like this. Hey, this may be a good idea. Maybe we'd have less problems. I'm just briefly going to read to you. I stood up there, and I made the following recommendations. One, that all police need mental health training protocol. They need to know, they need to somehow understand better when you're dealing with someone who isn't vicious, he's sick. We recommended carefully use of tasers. Use of tasers instead of guns. That doesn't mean you shoot off tasers all the time, but think in terms of tasers. Tamir Rice would have been here if the police, he never should have done anything, but if he'd gotten up and used a taser, would he jumped out of the car? Better analysis of crime data by police and community, as Al explained what we have in Cincinnati, other communities should do. We have a citizens' complaint authority, and we recommended that through the police. A citizens' complaint authority. Interestingly enough, and I don't know if you saw this morning, the budget, city budget was going to cut it even further. The city budget keeps cutting our, and they desperately need more people. They funded one more person for the staff, which is really, really good. We constantly have to be on our toes on this. And finally, a citizens' monitoring process. So you can see we're constantly involved and things like this. After the Samuel DuBose tragedy in Cincinnati, was it last year? Last summer. Those of you who are from other parts of the country who may not know of it, this was a man who was parked in his car near, not on the University of Cincinnati, but in a neighborhood, who was stopped for not having a front license plate and was killed by a University of Cincinnati policeman. After that, there is a University of Cincinnati Safety and Reform Commission that was established, and our executive director of MARC sits on that commission. So you see, we keep involved in community police relations. Let me just jump over, though, because as a rabbi and as a very active member of MARC, I really believe in interfaith work and in different religious groups working together. And I think we can work together on issues as we've tried to show we do with the police community relations, but on many other issues as well. And we have a moral strength together that we don't have separately and that I think non-religious groups perhaps don't have. Some of the things we've been working on, one of the things that has exploded in the last year, Islamophobia. And last fall, we were very involved in that. That kind of goes together with the any immigrant, I don't even know what to call about it, hatred that's going on in the country today. I'll just show you just briefly, this is just a minor thing, but we've held meetings on it. We've reached out to groups that feel they're threatened. And last Thanksgiving, Mark had a major op-ed in the paper. So we're working to be as inclusive as possible. Regarding refugees, we're involved in refugee resettlement along with Catholic Charities in Cincinnati. We work on affordable housing, other issues that many of you know about. One of the things that Mark, because over the years we have this standing in the community that we are invited to do from time to time, and it's really interesting, is the State Department from time to time hosts nationals from other countries, whether they are government officials or NGOs or whatever, and they go around to different cities. We are frequently asked to produce a panel of different faiths to talk to them. And they are always astounded. They look at us sitting at the table together, friends talking to each other, something that we take for granted here in America. I had one woman from Africa say to me when I was discussing something we've done politically, but how does your government let you do it? And so we kind of don't think. I learn a lot from these things, but they learn too, because that's the idea that different religious groups could sit down and talk to each other. Not just talk to each other, lots of us talk to each other, but that we work together on issues is amazing for them. And it's really been very interesting for me too to be on those panels. But I want to conclude probably with the one that's my most exciting project that we're doing right now that has gotten some publicity and we've been working on for a couple of years. With city council backing, actually it came from the mayor's office rather quietly but got to us, we are about to produce what we are calling the Mark ID card. This is an identification card, a city identification card that will be, I should, my wording is wrong, it is a card that will be recognized by the city as for identification purposes for all those who, for whatever reason, cannot get state IDs themselves. Now, this would include, most people think immediately, oh, illegal immigrants, oh, we don't want to do that. It's not just that, no, not that just that at all. It also includes homeless, who may have an address at a shelter, which could be used, but can't get ID. It also includes returning citizens from prison, who, while they can get a state ID, it frequently takes them 6 months of all kinds of bureaucracy, and until they get an ID, can't get a job. So we're very excited. It got City Hall backing a couple of months ago, and we are in the process now. We hope to roll it out the first time by middle August. Naturally, we got pushback from some people in the community, but it's really very hopeful, and we're hoping that other communities will also adopt it as well. So that's a little bit about what the Metropolitan Area Religious Coalition of Cincinnati does and who we are, and UU has been a very important part of it, one of our smaller groups, but certainly a powerful group, and very active in a lot of our causes. I think Lee's going to open it up for questions and discussions because we really want to hear from you as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Margie. Before you ask questions, I'd like to point out that we are recording this session, and so we have been asked to ask people to use the microphone so that your questions will be recorded. We can reduce a little time that way, because I won't have to repeat your questions. You can ask your question of any member of the panel. Anybody have a question? Go ahead, line up there, just whoever's there first, go.
I've got a... Thank you. Okay, I got a couple of practicals. One is, how is MARC funded? Is it the judicatories give
yes.
money?
Yes, we pay an amount to MARC that's based upon our loosely based upon our approximate membership.
Well, it's based on the group's ability to pay. Loosely membership. We have a couple of groups that have had problems. We will cut them back, cut some slack. A couple of the groups are what we call fairly wealthy, like the Archdiocese. But it says in our, they wouldn't disagree with me, I'm not being facetious, but it does say in our charter that no one group may contribute more than 40% of our budget. So.
Okay. And then just two other quick questions on the who sponsored those community discussions somehow? Because then you said we got together and kind of figured out the consensus. Who's the we?
The Greater Cincinnati Foundation raised money to hire the ARIA group that organized the community conversations. The ARIA group was appointed by the court to conduct that so that there would be order and there'd be a system and we'd be able to do it. Mark supplied a lot of the facilitators who were all volunteers, and the ARIA group trained them.
Okay, but because you had the lawsuit, you got this group.
Yes, that was all, at that time, that was the structure. But I will say, because there has been so much police reform work across the country under our current administration, there are efforts. I'm thinking of Las Vegas right now, San Francisco starting it, Baltimore's looking at it, where there's no lawsuit. Rather, it is a combined effort welcomed by the powers that be. I don't happen to buy that very often. I think that you need to beat people up in court sometimes, but I'm thrilled if you don't, because there aren't enough lawsuits to go around. So I think it'd be wonderful if you happen to be in a community where the power structure wants to hear this. I would still recommend that model as long as you have some sort of commitment to implement. One final word on that is the University of Cincinnati, which has a very transparent police reform effort underway right now without a lawsuit. I mean, I represented the family of Sam DuBose, but it's not our lawsuit that will ultimately cause the police reform. It's their leadership. So.
Hi, I'm Sally Riddle from Unitarian Universalist Congregation of Atlanta. One question is, you mentioned the UU Cincinnati Council, and is the council doing anything else in addition to being a way of giving you a voice on Mark?
Oh, my goodness, yes. I'm so glad you asked that, and I want everybody to know, I want you folks to know I did not plant that question.
No, she didn't.
But yes, as a matter of fact, while we are here today, five UU congregations in the greater Cincinnati area are planning their combined presentation together in Cincinnati's Pride Parade on Saturday. Because we will be here, and they are marching together. They will be using a Standing on the Side of Love banner that they will be taking out of First Unitarian Church, and we actually have a flaming chalice that rides on the top of a car that I believe they are borrowing from the gathering at Northern Hills. So, yes, they will be doing that. That's one example.
Yeah. So it sounds more like our cluster that we have at Georgia, which is multiple congregations working on social justice work and things like that.
Sounds very much the same. Yeah, yes, right. Yes. We have a number of those things, and we participate in UU Justice Ohio, which is a statewide group. And, okay. Yes, we're very active.
Okay. And the second question is, you mentioned the Citizen Advisor or Complaint Authority. Is that similar to what I would term a Citizen Review Board, something of that type where complaints are investigated independently of the police department and recommendations made?
Yes, but don't be seduced by the term citizen review. Always look behind the curtain, because there are many citizen review efforts that are useless. Volunteer citizens who simply get a drive-by look at particular complaints, then make a recommendation, and by the time they make the recommendation, the city's already done its decision on discipline. Our Citizen Complaint Authority has an independent investigatory group. That's the group that City Council was just voting to make sure that we had enough staff. They are not former Cincinnati police officers and can't be, and they have a system where they do recommendations to the board votes on it, and then the city manager gets that input before discipline is decided. That's okay. Teeth.
That's what
they also have the duty to look at policies themselves, so that if they find that policies are deficient, they make recommendations on that, so it's not just complaints.
And then just an extension, and I'll get out of the way. Do you know if they're then part of NACOL?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Yes.
Thank you very much for your presentation. My name is Aaron Payson. I'm one of the ministers in Worcester, Massachusetts, and I'm a founding member of the Worcester Clergy Police Community Partnership in our town. My question about the SARA protocol that you talked about is, I often find that what becomes the compelling issue is money for cleaning up space and doing those kinds of things. Does that enter into negotiations around problem solving when you find a hot spot in the community, and what sources of what resources can be brought to bear or are brought to bear in Cincinnati?
Yeah, money is often an issue, and any of the properties that have private ownership are expected to come up with the resources to clean it up themselves. If it is a hardship issue where the private owner is well-intended and simply doesn't have the resources, then there is effort made to help raise the money to help the person. There's local development corporations and the Greater Cincinnati Foundation. But it, as is more often the case, it's a wealthy landlord that can't afford it who's just absentee. We actually have a dedicated city lawyer who works on nuisance theory, and they are threatened with a nuisance lawsuit, and they'll take the property away if they don't clean it up.
Thank you. My second question is for Rabbi. Your analysis of, or your example of people sitting and listening to the panel discussions, interfaith panel discussions, and saying, how does your government stand for this? Reminds me that at least in our situation, we're the largest resettlement community in New England. And we bring 350 new arrivals every year into our city. And each of those, particularly coming from Africa and some from Middle Eastern countries, have a very different experience of the religious other in their communities of origin than they do in the United States. So we're thinking about doing a Abrahamic Partnerships, community-based Abrahamic Partnerships program, to bring together people of multiple faiths and to talk about the religious pluralism within the United States and have them experience that. Have you all done a community-based program like that?
I don't know of any community-based program like that. I know that several of the synagogues and several of the churches and one of the mosques now have been working very hard to get together and know each other. And the mosque, main mosque out in Westchester just a couple of weeks ago had one of their iftar dinners as an interfaith dinner. And, you know, we were there. You've probably heard this more and more, and it's certainly true that the first generation, it's very hard to really get to. The next generation become Americans much more easily. And talking to some of my Muslim friends, that's been very true. That's true as well. I think it's a great idea, but I think you're probably going to make more success with the teenagers of the children of those people who've come, because they'll get it much more easily. 30 years ago, when the Russian Jews were finally let out of Soviet Union, what was then the Soviet Union, we got quite a few in Cincinnati. And we had a lot of those kinds of problems. They had been taught to hate all religions, even their own, but, you know, number one. And number two, and this you didn't mention, but I think it's really important regarding police's community relations too, is they had been taught, and from the time they were young, you can't trust the government, right. You can't trust the police. And we found as we were trying to help them that many of them were lying to us about themselves, because that's what they'd been taught. That's how you got along. So, you know, the cultural differences of many of these refugees, so large, and it takes a long time. On the other hand, as you've probably found, and we're finding certainly with the refugees today in Cincinnati, they're so eager and so thankful that it's not that difficult.
Right. Yeah. Thank you.
Hello there. My name is Lori Albright. I'm from the First Unitarian Church of Cleveland. Cleveland also obviously has had its own. In so many ways. Cleveland rocks. But I'm not here to talk about that. I'm here to say I am very excited and impressed with the tenure of Mark, that it has sustained itself for all those years. Up in Cleveland, my congregation, as our other Unitarian congregations, involved with Greater Cleveland Congregations, which is an industrial area's affiliate. So part of my question is, what is your perception of how Mark has, you know, does it use an organizing model? Is it built completely by relationships? How do you see yourselves as having sustained your efforts together through this time? And what do you see as the glue that's going to keep you together moving forward into the future?
I'll start, and then I'll allow Rabbi Meyer to, and by the way, I'll point out we're not related, but at least not that we know of. So, somewhere in the past, possibly, but I'll start. I think there are some key things in our organization structure that go a long way to providing for the continuity that we have. One of the things is our mission. And part of that, we have a statement that we use. It's like a vision statement. To forgo the luxury of separate paths when a common path can be found. Because we know it's very easy to walk off on your own. But one denomination is not really large enough, even the Catholics, to move an entire community forever, or even for a generation. A second thing that's very important about our organization structure is that each religious denomination, each judicatory, gets one vote on an issue. This absolutely prevents one or two large denominations from controlling the decisions. If you have a structure that allows for one or two denominations to consistently control decision making, your smaller denominations will fall away.
But lest you think everything is rosy, it's hard sometimes, and it's also hard financially. When we were in the recession several years ago, many of our groups had to cut back. Now they are, for the most part, our only income. We have an executive director and an office assistant, and that's it. We're a very small, very lean organization. But we were running in the red, and it was rough. So we started something called Friends of Mark, and we have a campaign that goes out to people who've been supportive of us. And it's just private donations. And that kind of kept us going for a couple of years. And it's been helpful now that we try to do things better. And we're in the black at the moment, which is great. But it sometimes financially it's rough. Plus, you get to a point sometimes, and this happened a few years ago, and I will speak personally, and I know it's happened in the other denominations. I won't mention them, but I can mention my own, that, you know, I went to my group and I said, you know, we need a little more money. And they said, you're irrelevant to us. We really don't need you. You know, the synagogues are meeting with churches and they're doing their thing. What do we need Mark for? And I mean, I've heard this from some of the Protestant groups. I haven't heard from the Catholics, but I've heard from some of the Protestant groups. It's rough. And then you have to get out there and show them and really show them. And or you have someone. I had someone a few years ago who was chair of the Jewish Community Relations Council who was very much against some of the things that we stood for. And it was rough, you know. And I had to abstain a couple of times on votes. But so it's not easy, but the point is if you're really committed and you're all working together, eventually it works. The other thing I will say, and we don't like to do this, but we have had to let a couple of groups go because if they didn't pay and didn't pay and didn't pay, not the first year, eventually, you know, it's not fair to everybody else, and we've had to do that.
As an observer, I'll make one other comment. In the almost 40 years I've been doing this, there have been two Mark directors.
This is the third.
Yeah, okay. Very few directors, lots of relationship building, yes. Lots of continuity. Yes.
Yeah, there was one at the very beginning and then Duane, and now Peg Fox has been there, this is her 10th year. Right. So that makes a big difference. Yes, thank you.
My name is Pat Smith. I'm from the First Unitarian Universalist Church of Lubbock, Texas. And about 15 years ago, there was a group that was born out of the Industrial Areas Foundation, and it was called West Texas Organizing Strategy, and my church became a member. My question is, and it's still going on, but it's having some difficulty, so I'm very jealous of what y'all have been able to succeed at. So how do you decide what is a religion? How, I mean, for example, is Protestant, is that one group? Is it Presbyterian? I mean, I saw the list, and I was trying to understand, but I'm still trying to figure that out.
We had a request to respond to this. Since I sit on the executive board, I was there the day this one came in. We had a request from a group that doesn't necessarily sound like a religion, Volunteers of America. Now, being a Unitarian Universalist and being well aware of the fact that the UUA has 501c3 status as a religion, I said, did anybody ask them if they have 501c3 status and under what category it is? And the answer was, as a religion. And I said, if it's good enough for the IRS, it's good enough for me.
Well, I mean, for instance, we have, just to follow up, we have several Baptist churches, mm-hmm. and we have several Methodist churches. And they are not always, we have some very conservative and some forward-looking Presbyterians and Baptists. So they just have to decide on their own. Is that correct? And one other, another follow-up, we have some apostolics. We have, I mean, so they could come in as long as they kind of agree as a group to come in as one religion. Is that correct?
One group, yeah.
One group,
they,
okay.
If they consider themselves the same as those other churches. We have some churches in Cincinnati who haven't been interested in coming into us. We've reached out to them. Also, one of the mosques hasn't come in, and we're working very hard. And that seems to be, I'm not sure, but it's, you know, like the Presbyterians don't talk to the Methodists, one mosque doesn't get along with the other. So we're trying to, you know, we're hoping that over time that'll work. But they make two things. They make the request, or we go to them. We've gone to, for instance, to the Buddhists. And that's a situation where, as I said to someone before, the generations, they're not there yet. They don't understand interfaith that well. Their kids might. The next generation might get there. So it really, we'd like everybody to be in. We'd like it to be as big a tent as possible, but not everyone's interested and not everyone fits the bill.
Thank you.
Hi, Pax Riddle from Atlanta. I'm so proud of you guys. This is, as expats from Westchester.
Oh, okay.
it's wonderful to hear about this stuff going on in Cincinnati. When we were there, we weren't aware of this stuff going on, at least. It seemed to us more traditional area of Ohio. But it's wonderful, and we'd like to explore it further for some other things that are going on in Georgia. Because it looks like what all this work that over all these years that you guys have done, what we need to have is this is a model. Mm-hmm. This is a model that other medium and major-sized cities in the country ought to really be looking at seriously. I mean, I don't know if you guys could even publish something on this so that it was wider known. And I could perceive where you'd be getting visitations from other cities saying, tell us how to do this. We need to do this here in, you know, in our city, wherever it is. Certainly a place like Cleveland and other places. But I had a couple of questions. And these are things that some of us are working on in our various cities and counties already and trying to get to 21st century policing and putting together citizen review boards. Atlanta does have a very good citizen review board. That is NACOL, that has several investigators, professional investigators, and a number of other things, and we're using some of that idea as a model to transfer to our county. But anyway, I wanted to know two things. What happened to, I don't remember what happened to the cop, the campus cop.
Indicted for murder. Trial in October.
Thank you. And can the MARC ID card be used for all voting?
No, it's not. It can't be used for voting. It can be used for identification at various places. The main thing that's important here, to go back to community police relations, is that the city police will recognize it, which means if you're stopped for a taillight, you might get a ticket, okay? But you have some identification, so you won't be hauled down to jail. And if you happen to be undocumented and you're hauled down to jail, you're on your way out of the country. So that's how this kind of started, but of course it is expanded. Now we do know, and that we were very excited to find out about this, Hamilton County Public Library is going to accept it. And that's really nice and exciting. We have one bank in town that is waiting. They want to see what identification we use that our applicants use. They have to have some identification. They have to have some proof of identification, and we have a list of things that they can use. And it's possible a bank will use it. That's also very exciting because, as many of you know, many of these people are, as they say, walking ATMs. I mean, they are just so vulnerable because they need to keep their cash with them. So, but no, it can't be used for voting.
Hello, I'm Skye. I'm from Dayton. So, actually Franklin, but...
We know where that is.
Yeah, you. I thought I was like sitting there. I'm like, I should say Franklin. You know where that is probably. But I had a question about, we did an organizing group called Lift Greater Dayton in Dayton for a while, a few years ago, and I was involved in that. And we had some issues with groups that really wanted to proselytize, or at least state very loudly that their way was the best way. And so that made difficulties. And so I was wondering how you guys manage that and that sense that some people have that they really must do that. Do you just not work with groups like that or what?
This is, it seems like an odd thing. Of course, when we have our MARC executive board meetings, we only have one representative from each religious judicatory in the room. And so, and another thing is that when we get together, because of the issues we are really on fire about, we don't talk doctrine, we talk issues. And I know, for one thing, since she is a rabbi, I am not going to be converting her to Unitarian Universalism, and she's probably pretty certain that she's not going to pull me out of the UUA. So this, and even when we have larger gatherings that come together, interfaith demonstrations on our Fountain Square, that sort of thing, we don't really see people going around attempting to proselytize other people. We see people being very grateful to see each other present.
Yeah, because I guess maybe proselytize is not the right word, but it's like really like want to say this is about Jesus or something, and the rest of us are all like, we're not signing on to that.
I can answer that. Yes, we do get some of that, and it is uncomfortable to me when we hear it. And I don't get into the issue, but our executive director will sometimes gently try to speak to someone and say, can you make your prayer a little more universal or a little more inclusive or something for the next time? But yes, that happens. But it's not blatant, and I don't think it's on purpose. It's usually by a minister who is so used to doing it that way that he just wouldn't have thought of it another way. Interestingly enough, and I guess my feminism has to come out here, I've never had that problem with a woman minister.
So, Charlie Dietrich from Norfolk, Virginia. I wondered whether there's the executive director who's an employee. There's also the president of MARC or some
yes,
such.
Yes, that's me.
And you obviously haven't been the president of MARC the entire time. I'm wondering whether that tends to be somebody who is clergy of some sort.
Not necessarily. It's someone from the executive board, and the executive board, which is one member from each of the judicatories, can be clergy. I would say right now, and it could change, right now it's maybe less than a third, about a quarter clergy and a quarter lay people. It really depends on the denomination. They may have a clergy who comes. And, they may select a member of the clergy to be on the board, or they may select a layperson to be on the board.
Okay. And does that have any effect on the effectiveness of the organization, whether it's led by someone who is in the clergy or not?
I don't think so. I haven't felt. Al, you go back further than I do, even with Mark.
I have not.
No.
Okay.
I don't think so.
I'm Ann Heitkamp from UU Church West in Brookfield, Wisconsin. And I've got a question more on the police community relation things, which is, I mean, it's one thing to say you've had the collaboration and the monitoring, but have you really seen real differences in the police practices over the time?
Yes. Since the collaborative was put in place, our arrests have been cut in half for misdemeanors and felonies. So that's half as many, you know, African Americans going to jail and prison as before. Now, I will say that the percentage of blacks among the remaining arrests continues to be disproportionate.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something we're working on, and it's something that we care very deeply about. But we've named it, and we're working on it.
Mm-hmm.
Injuries to officers is way down because we aren't doing as many arrests. Injuries to citizens are way down. I don't have hardly any cases in Cleveland, in Cincinnati. Most of my cases are in Cleveland, where they still, you know, violate civil rights regularly. So we have seen a dramatic difference.
Okay.
And the culture of the department has actually changed, and that's important.
Okay. And what, just before you go, what did you say that term Sarah stands for?
Yeah, now that's just one technique.
Yeah.
I don't say that you have to use Sarah in order to do problem solving, but it organizes your thinking.
Yeah.
So it's scanning to identify the problem, assessment to make sure that you've gathered all the data that you need in order to come up with strategies to solve the problem, a response where you commit to a response, and you're still in community, you're still in a group, and you're doing that response together, and then there's assessment so that you don't disband before you fixed it. So the assessment is critical because if you didn't fix it, you got to go back to assessment. And
So there's no H on the Sarah.
No.
And then one other thing just to say, in Milwaukee, we also have had a longstanding interfaith religious group started after 1967 riots. Except they explicitly will not take what they consider political stands. And it's very frustrating because we have the groups together, the long term, and it's like we're here to do interfaith work, and that does not include getting involved in these, quote, political issues.
It may be about how you define those kinds of things. We consider political positions to be partisan positions. We don't take political positions either, but we are very concerned about social justice, and that's where our focus is.
And they won't take stands on, like...
There are interfaith religious organizations, ministerial organizations, in many cities, and that's very different from what ours is.
This is more your mind.
It is?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, what do they do?
Okay.
Let's get together and make change.
Yeah.
We can stay around for those who wish, but we have exceeded our time. I want to thank everybody who came very much for being here and for your questions. Thank you.